Maybe they were here specifically to plant dope in this house, Barris said. Setting us up, then phone in a tip later. Maybe there's dope hidden like this in the phone, for example, in the wall outlets. We're going to have to go through the whole house and get it absolutely clean before they phone the tip in. And we've probably got only hours.
You check the wall sockets, Luckman said. I'll take the phone apart.
Wait, Barris said, holding up his hand. If they see us scrambling around just before the raid.
What raid? Arctor said.
If we're running frantically around flushing dope, Barris said, then we can't allege, even though it's true, that we didn't know the dope was there. They'll catch us actually holding it. And maybe that, too, is part of their plan.
Ah, shit, Luckman said in disgust.
He threw himself down on the couch.
Shit, shit, shit. We can't do anything. There's probably dope hidden in 1,000 places we'll never find. We've had it.
He glared up at Arctor in baffled fury.
We've had it!
Arctor said to Barris, What about your electronic cassette thing rigged to the front door? He had forgotten about it. So had Barris, evidently. Luckman, too.
Yes, this should be extremely informational at this point, Barris said.
He knelt down by the couch, reached underneath, grunted, then hauled forth a small plastic cassette tape recorder.
Oh, this should tell us a great deal, he began, and then his face sank. Well, it probably wouldn't ultimately have proven that important.
He pulled out the power plug from the back and set the cassette down on the coffee table.
We know the main fact, that they did enter during our absence. That was its main task.
Silence.
I bet I can guess, Arctor said.
Barris said.
The first thing they did when they entered was to switch it to the off position. I left it set to on, but look, now it's turned to off. So, although I...
It didn't record, Luckman said, disappointed.
They made them move swiftly, Barris said, before so much as an inch of tape passed through the recording head.
This, by the way, is a neat little job of Sony. It has a separate head for playback, erase and record, and the Dolby noise reduction system. I got it cheap, at a swap meet, and it's never given me any trouble.
Arctor said, Mandatory soul time.
Absolutely.
Barris agreed as he seated himself in a chair and leaned back, removing his shades.
At this point, we have no other recourse in view of their evasive tactics. You know, Bob, there is one thing you could do, although it would take time.
Sell the house and move out, Arctor said. Barris nodded.
Oh, but hell, Luckman protested. This is our home. What are houses like this in this area worth now? Barris asked, hands behind his head. On the market. I wonder, too, what interest rates are up to.
Maybe you can make a considerable profit, Bob.
On the other hand, you might have to take a loss on a quick sale.
But, Bob, my God, you're up against professionals.
Do you know a good realtor? Luckman asked both of them.
Arctor said, What reason should we give for selling? They always ask.
Yeah, we can't tell the realtor the truth, Luckman agreed. But we could say...
He pondered as he moodily drank his beer.
I can't think of a reason.
Barris, what's a reason, a shuck we could give?
Arctor said,
We'll just say, flat out, there's narcotics planted all over the house, and since we don't know where it is, we decided to move out and let the new owner get busted instead of us.
No, Barris disagreed.
I don't think we can afford to be up front like that. I'd suggest you say, Bob, you say that you got a job transfer.
Where to? Luckman said.
Cleveland, Barris said.
Well, I think we should tell them the truth, Arctor said. In fact, we could put an ad in the L.A. Times. Modern 3-bedroom tract house with 2 bathrooms for easy and fast flushing, high-grade dope stash throughout all rooms, dope included in sale price.
But they'd be calling asking what kind of dope, Luckman said.
And we don't know, it could be anything.
And how much there is, Barris murmured. Prospective buyers might inquire about the quantity.
Like, Luckman said, it could be an ounce of roach weed, just shit like that. Or it could be pounds of heroin.
What I suggest, Barris said, is that we phone County Drug Abuse and inform them of the situation and ask them to come in and remove the dope. Search the house, find it, dispose of it.
Because to be realistic, there really isn't time to sell the house. I researched the legal situation once for this type of bind, and most law books agree.
Are you crazy? Lockman said, staring at him as if he were one of Jerry's aphids.
Phone drug abuse? There'll be narcs in here within less time than...
That's the best hope, Barris continued smoothly. And we can all take lie detector tests to prove we didn't know where it was or what it was or even put it there. It is there without our knowledge or permission. If you tell them that, Bob, they'll exonerate you.
After a pause, he admitted, eventually, when all the facts are known in open court.
But on the other hand, Luckman said, we've got our own stashes. We do know where they are, and like that, does this mean we gotta flush all our stashes? And suppose we miss some, even one. Ah, oh, Christ, this is awful.
There's no way out, Arctor said. They appear to have us.
From one of the bedrooms, Donna Hawthorne appeared, wearing a funny little knee pants outfit, hair tumbled in disarray, her face puffy with sleep.
I came on in, she said, like the note said, and I sat around for a while and then crashed. The note didn't say when you'd be back. Why were you yelling? God, you're uptight. You woke me.
You smoked a joint just now? Arctor asked her. Before you crashed?
Sure, she said. Otherwise I can't ever sleep.
It's Donna's roach, Luckman said. Give it to her.
My God, Bob Arctor thought. I was into that trip as much as they were. We all got into it together that deep. He shook himself, shuddered, and blinked. Knowing what I know, I still stepped across into that freaked-out, paranoid space with them, viewed it as they viewed it. Muddled, he thought. Murky again. The same murk that covers them covers me. The murk of this dreary dream world we float around in.
You got us out of it, he said to Donna.
Out of what? Donna said, puzzled and sleepy.
Not what I am, he thought, or what I know was supposed to take place here today. But this chick, she put my head back together, got all three of us out. A little black-haired chick, wearing a funky outfit who I report on and am shucking and hopefully will be fucking. Another shuck-and-fuck reality world, he thought, with this foxy girl the center of it. A rational point that unwired us abruptly. Otherwise, where would our heads finally have gone? We, all three of us, had gotten out of it entirely. But not for the first time, he thought. Not even today.
You shouldn't leave your place unlocked like that, Donna said. You could get ripped off, and it'd be your own fault. Even the giant capitalist insurance companies say that if you leave a door or a window unlocked, they won't pay. That's the main reason I came in when I saw the note. Somebody ought to be here if it's unlocked like that.
How long you been here? Arctor asked her. Maybe she had aborted the bugging, maybe not.
Probably not.
Donna consulted her $20 electric Timex wristwatch, which he had given her.
About 38 minutes.
Hey! Her face brightened.
Bob, I got that wolf book with me. You want to look at it now? Oh, it's got a lot of heavy shit in it, if you can dig it.
Life, Barris said, as if to himself, is only heavy and none else. And there is only the one trip, all heavy. Heavy that leads to the grave. For everyone and everything.
Did I hear you say you're going to sell your house? Donna asked him. Or was that, you know, me dreaming? I couldn't tell. What I heard sounded spaced out and weird.
We're all dreaming. Arctor said. If the last to know he's an addict is the addict, then maybe the last to know when a man means what he says is the man himself, he reflected. He wondered how much of the garbage that Donna had overheard he had seriously meant. He wondered how much of the insanity of the day, his insanity, had been real, or just induced as a contact lunacy by the situation. Donna always was a pivot point of reality for him. For her, this was the basic, natural question. He wished he could answer.
Chapter 7 The next day, Fred showed up in his scramble suit to hear about the bugging installation.
The 6 holo scanners now operating within the premises. 6 should be sufficient for now, we feel. Transmit to a safe apartment down the street in the same block as Arctor's house, Hank explained, laying out a floor plan of Bob Arctor's house on the metal table between them. It chilled Fred to see this, but not overly much. He picked the sheet up and studied the locations of the various scanners, in the various rooms, here and there so that everything fell under constant video scrutiny, as well as audio.
So I do the playback at that apartment, Fred said.
Oh, we use it as a playback monitor spot for about 8, or perhaps it's 9 now, houses or apartments under scrutiny in that particular neighborhood. So you'll be bumping into other undercover people doing their playbacks. Always have your suit on, then.
I'll be seen going into the apartment. It's too close.
Guess so, but it's an enormous complex, hundreds of units, and it's the only one we found electronically feasible. It'll have to do, at least until we get legal eviction on another unit elsewhere. We're working on it, 2 blocks farther away, where you'll be less conspicuous. Week or so, I guess. If holoscans could be transmitted with acceptable resolution along micro-relay cables and ITT lines like the older...
I'll just use the shuck that I'm bawling some broad in that complex if Arctor or Luckman or any of those heads see me entering.
It really didn't complicate matters that much. In fact, it would cut down his in-transit unpaid time, which was an important factor. He could easily truck on over to the safe apartment, do the scanning replay, determine what was relevant to his reports and what could be discarded, and then return very soon to
my own house, he thought. Arctor's house. Up the street at the house, I am Bob Arctor, the heavy doper suspect being scanned without his knowledge, and then every couple of days I find a pretext to slip down the street and into the apartment where I am Fred, replaying miles and miles of tape to see what I did, and this whole business, he thought, depresses me. Except for the protection and valuable personal information it will give me. Probably whoever's hunting me will be caught by the holoscanners within the first week. Realizing that, he felt mellow. Fine, he said to Hank.
So you see where the hollows are placed. If they need servicing, you probably can do it yourself while you're in Arctor's house and no one else is around. You do get into his house normally, don't you?
Well, shit, Fred thought. If I do that, then I will be on the hollow replays. So when I turn them over to Hank, I have to be obviously one of the individuals visible on them, and that cuts it down.
Up to now, he had never actually laid it on Hank as to how he knew what he knew about his suspects. He himself as Fred, the effective screening device, carried the information. But now, audio and holo scanners, which did not automatically edit out, as did his verbal report, all identifying mention of himself, there would be Robert Arctor tinkering with the hollows when they malfunctioned, his face mushrooming up to fill the screen. But on the other hand, he would be the first to replay the storage tapes he could still edit. Except that it would take time and care. But edit out what? Edit out Arctor? Entirely? Arctor was the suspect. Just Arctor when he went to fiddle with the hollows.
I'll edit myself out, he said, so you won't see me, as a matter of conventional protection.
Of course. You haven't done this before?
Hank reached to show him a couple of pictures.
You use a bulk erasing device that wipes out any section where you as the informant appear. That's the hollows, of course. For audio, there's no set policy followed. You won't have any real trouble, though. We take it for granted that you're one of the individuals in Arctor's circle of friends who frequent that house. You are either Jim Barris or Ernie Luckman or Charles Freck or Donna Hawthorne.
Donna, he laughed. The suit laughed, actually. In its way.
Or Bob Arctor,
Hank continued, studying his list of suspects. I report on myself all the time, Fred said.
So you will have to include yourself from time to time in the holotapes you turn over to us, because if you systematically edit yourself out, then we can deduce who you are by a process of elimination, whether we want to or not. What you must do, really, is edit yourself out in, what should I call it? An inventive, artistic, hell, the word is creative way. As, for instance, during the brief intervals when you're in the house alone and doing research, going through papers and drawers, or servicing a scanner within view of another scanner. Or,
you should just send someone to the house once a month in a uniform, Fred said.
and have him say, "Good morning, I'm here to service the monitoring devices covertly installed on your premises, in your phone, and in your car." Maybe Arctor would pick up the bill.
Arctor would probably off him and then disappear.
The scramble suit Fred said, "If Arctor is hiding that much, that's not been proved."
"Arctor may be hiding a great deal. We've got more recent information on him gathered and analyzed. There is no substantial doubt of it. He is a ringer, a $3 bill. He is phony. So keep on him until he drops, until we have enough to arrest him and make it stick."
"You want stuff planted?"
"We'll discuss that later."
"You think he's up high in the, the SD agency?"
"What we think isn't of any importance in your work," Hank said. "We evaluate. You report with your own limited conclusions. This is not a put-down of you, but we have information, lots of it, not available to you. The broad picture, the computerized picture."
"Arctor is doomed," Fred said, "if he's up to anything. And I have a hunch from what you say that he is."
"We should have a case on him this way soon," Hank said. "And then we can close the book on him, which will please us all."
Fred stoically memorized the address and number of the apartment, and suddenly recalled that he had seen a young head-type couple who had recently abruptly disappeared now and then entering and leaving the building. Busted, and their apartment taken over for this. He had liked them. The girl had long flaxen hair, wore no bra. One time he had driven past as she was lugging groceries and had offered her a lift. They had talked. She was an organic type, into megavitamins and kelp and sunlight. Nice, shy. But she declined. Now he could see why. Evidently, the two of them had been holding, or more likely, dealing. On the other hand, if the apartment was needed, a possession wrap would do, and you could always get that. What, he wondered, would Bob Arctor's littered but large house be used for by the authorities when Arctor had been hauled off? An even vaster intelligence processing center, most likely. "You'd like Arctor's house," he said aloud. "It's run down and typically dope or dirty, but it's big. Nice yard. Lots of shrubs."
"That's what the installation crew reported back. Some excellent possibilities."
"They what?" "They reported it had plenty of possibilities, did they?"
The scramble suit voice clacked out maddeningly without tone or resonance, which made him even angrier.
"Like what?"
"Well, one obvious possibility. Its living room gives a view of an intersection, so passing vehicles could be graphed and their license plates."
Hank studied his many, many papers.
"But Bert What's-His-Face, who headed the crew, felt the house had been allowed to deteriorate so badly that it wouldn't be worth our taking over. As an investment."
"In what way? In what fashion deteriorated?"
"The roof."
"The roof's perfect."
"The interior and exterior paint. The condition of the floors, the kitchen cabinets."
"Bullshit," Fred said. Or anyhow, the suit droned. "Arctor may have let dishes pile up in the garbage and not dusted, but after all, three dudes living there with no chicks? His wife left him. Women are supposed to do all that. If Donna Hawthorne had moved in like Arctor wanted her to, begged her to, she would have kept it up. Anyhow, any professional janitorial service could put the whole house in top shape as far as cleaning goes in half a day. Regarding the roof, that really makes me mad, because..."
"Then you recommend we acquire it after Arctor's been arrested and loses title?"
Fred the suit stared at him.
"Well?"
Hank said impassively, ballpoint pen ready.
"I have no opinion, one way or another."
Fred rose from his chair to leave.
"Oh, you're not splitting yet,"
Hank said, motioning him to reseat himself. He fished among the papers on his desk.
"I have a memo here."
"You always have memos," Fred said. "For everybody."
"This memo," Hank said, "instructs me to send you over to room 203 before you leave today."
"If it's about that anti-drug speech I gave at the Lions Club, I already had my ass chewed out about it."
"No, this isn't that."
Hank tossed him the fluttery note.
"This is something different. I'm finished with you, so why don't you head right over there now and get it done with?"
He found himself confronting an all-white room with steel fixtures and steel chairs and steel desk, all bolted down, a hospital-like room, purified and sterile and cold, with the light too bright.
In fact, to the right stood a weighing scale with a sign, "Have technician only adjust." Two deputies regarded him, both in full uniform of the Orange County Sheriff's Office, but with medical stripes.
You are Officer Fred? One of them, with a handlebar mustache, said.
Yes, sir, Fred said. He felt scared.
All right, Fred. First, let me state that, as you undoubtedly are aware, your briefings and debriefings are monitored and later played back for study, in case anything was missed at the original sessions. This is SOP, of course, and applies to all officers reporting in orally, not you alone.
The other medical deputy said, plus all other contacts you maintain with the department, such as phone contacts and additional activities, such as your recent public speech in Anaheim to the Rotary Club boys.
Lions, Fred said.
Do you take Substance D?
The left-hand medical deputy said.
That question, the other said, is moot, because it's taken for granted that in your work you're compelled to. So, don't answer. Not that it's incriminating, but it's simply moot.
He indicated a table on which a bunch of blocks and other riffraff, colorful plastic objects lay, plus peculiar items that Officer Fred could not identify.
Step over here and be seated, Officer Fred. We are going to administer, briefly, several easy tests. This won't consume much of your time, and there will be no physical discomfort involved.
About that speech I gave, Fred said.
What this is about, the left-hand medical deputy said as he seated himself and produced a pen and some forms, stems from a recent departmental survey showing that several undercover agents working in this area have been admitted to neural aphasia clinics during the past month.
You're conscious of the high factor of addictiveness of Substance D, the other deputy said to Fred.
Sure, Fred said. Of course I am.
We're going to give you these tests now, the seated deputy said, in this order, starting with what we call the BG, or...
You think I'm an addict? Fred said.
Well, whether you're an addict or not, that isn't a prime issue, since a blocking agent is expected from the Army Chemical Warfare Division sometime within the next 5 years. These tests do not pertain to the addictive properties of Substance D, but, let me give you this set ground test first, which determines your ability readily to distinguish set from ground. See this geometric diagram?
He laid a drawn-on card before Fred on the table.
Within the apparently meaningless lines is a familiar object that we would all recognize. You are to tell me what the...
Item. In July 1969, Joseph E. Bogan published his revolutionary article, The Other Side of the Brain, An Appositional Mind. In this article, he quoted an obscure Dr. A. L. Wiggin, who in 1844 wrote, "The mind is essentially dual, like the organs by which it is exercised. This idea has presented itself to me, and I have dwelt on it for more than a quarter of a century, without being able to find a single valid or even plausible objection. I believe myself then able to prove, one, that each cerebrum is a distinct and perfect whole as an organ of thought, two, that a separate and distinct process of thinking or ratiocination may be carried on in each cerebrum simultaneously." In his article, Bogan concluded, "I believe, with Wiggin, that each of us has two minds in one person. There is a host of detail to be marshaled in this case, but we must eventually confront directly the principal resistance to the Wiggin view, that is, the subjective feeling possessed by each of us that we are one. This inner conviction of oneness is a most cherished opinion of Western man. Object is, and point to it in the total field."
I'm being mutton-jeffed, Fred thought.
What is all this? He said, gazing at the deputy and not the diagram.
I'll bet it's the Lions Club speech, he said. He was positive.
The seated deputy said, "In many of those taking Substance D, a split between the right hemisphere and the left hemisphere of the brain occurs. There's a loss of proper gestalting, which is a defect within both the percept and the cognitive systems, although apparently the cognitive system continues to function normally. But what is now received from the percept system is contaminated by being split, so it too, therefore, fails gradually to function, progressively deteriorating. Have you located the familiar object in this line drawing? Can you find it for me?"
Fred said.
You're not talking about heavy metals trace deposits in the neuroreceptor sites, are you? Irreversible?
No,
the standing deputy said.
This is not brain damage, but a form of toxicity. Brain toxicity. It's a toxic brain psychosis affecting the percept system by splitting it. What you have before you, this BG test, measures the accuracy of your percept system to act as a unified whole. Can you see the form here? It should jump right out at you.
I see a Coke bottle, Fred said.
A soda pop bottle is correct,
the seated deputy said, and whipped the drawing away, replacing it with another. Have you noticed anything, Fred said, in studying my briefings and like that? Anything slushed? It's the speech, he thought. Yeah, what about the speech I gave, he said. Did I show bilateral dysfunction there? Is that why I've been hauled in here, for these tests?
He had read about these split-brain tests, given by the department from time to time.
No, this is routine, the seated deputy said. We realize, Officer Fred, that undercover agents must of necessity take drugs in the line of duty. Those who've had to go into federal...
Permanently? Fred asked.
Well, not many permanently. Again, this is percept contamination that could, in the course of time, rectify itself as...
Murky, Fred said. It murks over everything.
Are you getting any cross chatter? One of the deputies asked him suddenly.
What? He said uncertainly.
Between hemispheres. If there's damage to the left hemisphere, where the linguistic skills are normally located, then sometimes the right hemisphere will fill in to the best of its ability.
I don't know, he said. Not that I'm aware of.
Thoughts not your own, as if another person or mind were thinking, but different from the way you would think. No, even foreign words that you don't know, but that it's learned from peripheral perception sometime during your lifetime.
No, nothing like that. I'd notice that.
I probably would. From people with left hemisphere damage who've reported it, evidently it's a pretty shattering experience.
Well, I guess I'd notice that.
It used to be believed that the right hemisphere had no linguistic faculties at all, but that was before so many people had screwed up their left hemispheres with drugs and gave it, the right, a chance to come on, to fill the vacuum.
I'll certainly keep my eyes open for that, Fred said, and heard the mere mechanical quality of his voice, like that of a dutiful child in school, agreeing to obey whatever dull order was imposed on him by those in authority. Those taller than he was, and in a position to impose their strength and will on him, whether it was reasonable or not. Just agree, he thought, and do what you're told.
What do you see in the second picture?
A sheep, Fred said.
Show me the sheep.
The seated deputy leaned forward and rotated the picture.
An impairment and set background discrimination gets you in a heap of trouble. Instead of perceiving no forms, you perceive faulty forms.
Like dog shit, Fred thought. Dog shit certainly would be considered a faulty form by any standard.
The data indicate that the mute, minor hemisphere is specialized for gestalt perception, being primarily a synthesist in dealing with information input. The speaking, major hemisphere, in contrast, seems to operate in a more logical, analytic, computer-like fashion, and the findings suggest that a possible reason for cerebral lateralization in man is basic incompatibility of language functions on the one hand and synthetic perceptual functions on the other.
Felt ill and depressed, almost as much as he had during his Lions Club speech. There's no sheep there, is there? He said. But was I close?
This is not a Rorschach test, the seated deputy said, where a muddled blot can be interpreted many ways by many subjects. In this, one specific object as such has been delineated, and one only. In this case, it's a dog.
A what? Fred said.
A dog.
Well, how can you tell it's a dog? He saw no dog. Show me.
The deputy... This conclusion finds its experimental proof in the split-brain animal, whose two hemispheres can be trained to perceive, consider, and act independently. In the human, where propositional thought is typically lateralized in one hemisphere, the other hemisphere evidently specializes in a different mode of thought, which may be called appositional. The rules are methods by which propositional thought is elaborated on this side of the brain, the side which speaks, reads, and writes, have been subjected to analyses of syntax, semantics, mathematical logic, etc. for many years. The rules by which appositional thought is elaborated on the other side of the brain will need study for many years to come. Turn the card over. On the back, the formal, stark, simple outline of a dog had been inscribed, and now Fred recognized it as the shape drawn within the lines on the front side. In fact, it was a specific type of dog, a greyhound with a drawn-in gut. "What's that mean?" he said, "that I saw a sheep instead."
"Probably just a psychological block," the standing deputy said, shifting his weight about. "Only when the whole set of cards is run, and then we have the several other tests."
"Why this is a superior test to the Rorschach?" the seated deputy interrupted, producing the next drawing. "Is that it is not interpretive. There are as many wrongs as you can think up, but only one right. The right object that the U.S. Department of Psych Graphics drew into it and certified for it for each card. That's what's right, because it is handed down from Washington. You either get it or you don't. And if you show a run of not getting it, then we have a fix on a functional impairment in perception and we dry you out for a while, until you test okay later on.